So I'm going to be talking for about, what time is it now?
It's 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. So I'm hoping to talk for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes max. This will help. And I undertook the task to talk to you about the Buddha. I think that's a really big and challenging task. I think talking about anybody is a really big task, because how do we talk about people? It's just like, how do we introduce somebody? Like, how am I to introduce you to somebody you haven't met and somebody who lived so long ago? In a way, that's impossible. I would like to say that by the end of this talk, you would know the Buddha, but actually that's not possible. I'll tell you a little bit more about that towards the end of the talk. So I was wondering how to approach this talk, and I thought that I really like when I haven't met somebody and I'm told about them, what I like is to get people's impressions on that person, you see what I mean? To know what kind of impression this person I'm about to know, or maybe not, let's say I'm about to know, what kind of impression that person has had on people's lives. And perhaps I'd like to know a little bit about his life or her life, but mainly I'm kind of interested to know the kind of impact that person is having on other people. And I thought today in this talk I'm gonna take that approach to introduce the Buddha. So I'm gonna talk mainly about the kind of impact the Buddha had on people in his day, and also the kind of impact he's had in my life and kind of in the world today. But mainly I'm gonna focus on kind of some stories that I really like, of people coming in contact with the Buddha and the impression that left on them, and talk a little bit about my own experience and my own kind of understanding of the Buddha. So I'll start with what I got many stories, so as I go along I'm just going to have to choose, because I can't really tell you all of the stories. So anyway, but the first one is of a man called Yasa. It's a young man called Yasa who lived a while ago, a long time ago. Unlike many people today, he really liked partying. He really liked his pleasure in all senses, as in he liked to delight in sensual pleasure. And Yasa was the king, no, he wasn't the king, he was the son of a really rich businessman. So he sort of, he didn't have to worry about money at all. He was basically really rich. So he just could put on these big parties, and everyone could, the town and the village could come and then enjoy themselves. So Yasa was really popular among people. I'm not sure if, yeah, I actually don't know whether he was popular because of his parties or because of his wealth, or maybe he was just really charismatic, I just don't know. The fact is that people really liked Yasa, and that he was rich and that he liked partying. So there he was, partying one day, and we are told he lived in India, and at that time, the greatest thing you could do, he liked women. So the greatest thing you can do is to bring musicians, female musicians, into your parties, and that would be so kind of delightful. So he had these beautiful musicians playing for him. And the party just went on late into the night until everyone fell asleep. And then just before the sun was rising, Yasa woke up and he looked around the room, and he saw everyone just kind of sleeping on top of each other, some kind of semi-naked. Those beautiful women those women that the day before, just a few hours before, looked so beautiful, now they were just kind of dribbling with their mouths open and snoring, and they had one of them had their her flute on the armpit. So you could imagine poor Yasa was just kind of He was terrified. He was just like, what's this? How could I take delight in this? Look at all these people. And you can imagine, probably you all know, what happens the day after you've been partying and drinking and so on. You just feel really awful. So there he was, feeling really, really awful in his body and his mind, all foggy. And then all this, like, scene of this pool of people sleeping and snoring and talking while they were sleeping. So he was completely terrified, and he thought to himself, this constant thought, this is horrible, this is horrible, this is really fearful. So he put his slippers on and left his house and left the town, just saying to himself, this is horrible, this is horrible, this is horrible. Has that ever happened to you? So he left the village, and he entered the woods, the forest. So there he was, like, kind of running or just kind of walking, telling to himself, this is horrible, and just feeling really awful. And at some point in the middle of the woods, there was this figure, this really serene and tranquil figure. And I imagine, yes, I couldn't quite tell whether he was a man or some kind of divine being, like maybe an angel, because he was such beauty this person radiated. And then he heard his voice. Yasa heard this kind of person's voice. He said, "Come, Yasa. This is not horrible. This is not frightening. I'll show you something. Come and I'll teach you something that is not terrifying, something that is beautiful and joyful." And Yasa, it's a really strange thing. And if you're running in the middle of the forest and suddenly you see this figure and he tells you that, it's kind of a bit strange. But actually Yasa's heart just kind of melted in real kind of delight and joy. And he filled with joy. His heart just filled with joy and hope. So he went to that person and that was the Buddha, as you may have guessed. The Buddha was that person in the middle of the forest who told Yasa, "Come, Yasa, this is not frightening, this is not horrible." And I thought, this kind of story was coming back to my mind again and again and again during the last few weeks, and I thought, why did the Buddha have such an impact on Yasa? He just said those words, but even before he spoke, I imagine Yasa was just completely sort of, I don't even know the word. Any words that you may, transfixed? Yeah, that's the one. In awe, that's it. Now, the Buddha used to be rich. He grew up as a rich man as well, and he liked his pleasures as well. So he really understood Yasa in a way. He just could see Yasa, this young man running towards him, saying it is horrible. So he could just tell what was going on. And he just knew what was the right thing for that young man to hear. And he was just so kind. He was just so kind and inviting. So this will take me back to telling you a little bit about the earlier life of the Buddha, because at that point, the Buddha was already a great master. But he wasn't born a master. He was born a human being, normal human being with desires and greed and hatred and all sorts of kind of things that we all experience. So as I say, he was born in a really rich family, and he was brought up as a warrior. This was one of the points I wanted to remark, that he was a warrior. I'm going to tell you a lot of things about the Buddha, but the fact that he was a warrior really strikes me, because often when you hear about the Buddha nowadays, it's this kind of really soft image. Even the images of the, if you Google Buddha, you get some really kind of cheesy images, and that's just not what the Buddha looked like. He didn't look like that. Probably he didn't look like that either. But these are just sort of attempts to depict a really incredible man. But the fact that he was brought up as a warrior tells me that he was really fit. He was really skilled in handling weapons, and he was really agile. He was probably really positive. He was quite kind of athletic and positive, probably. And he was rich as well. His family was rich, so he had three palaces, and he also had parties like Yasa. But he got to the point where all of that positivity, in a way, he was right at the top of what human beings can aspire to in a worldly sense. Whatever he wanted materially, he could just get it. He had a wife, he had a son, he had status, he had a, I don't know, he had everything. Everything we sort of aspire to when we really want to kind of become somebody in life. He had all of that. And at some point he just became completely kind of, any another word here, you may help me. Dissatisfied. Another word for that?
Disenfranchised.
Whoa. that one sounds good. Dissatisfied, let's say. That's easier for me. Yeah, completely dissatisfied. He was just a bit like Yasa, maybe not as dramatic, but gradually he started to realize all of this is not going to give me any real everlasting satisfaction and pleasure. All this richness, all this kind of, all this status and power. He was predicted to be a great conqueror as well. So if he decided, he had such skill and such character that he could just be a great conqueror. Later on, at some point, once he left everything behind, he said, it is much better to conquer oneself than conquering 1,000 men or 1,000 armies or something like that. So he carried on using this language of a warrior. But anyway, I was telling you about him becoming dissatisfied. And he started seeing things that he'd never seen before. Things that may seem so obvious, but really the fact that he was seeing them kind of for the first time, and the whole of his being was really taking these facts in, really had a big effect in his heart and his mind. So he saw that he was getting old. He was actually really young. He was in his 20s, but he sort of realized that there were people out there who were really old and frail and didn't have energy anymore. And he saw the suffering in that. And you can imagine in India that being more kind of obvious. So he realized it was inevitable that he was going to grow old to the point where he wouldn't have any more energy. And he would suffer a lot. And also that he was going to become ill at some point. Like illness was inevitable. And he saw people around being ill. And he saw the pain in that. And then he saw that people died. He saw that he was going to die as well. And everyone he loved were going to die. And everyone here is going to die. Oh, no. So he really took these truths in. And everything just seemed completely pointless. Everything he was doing with his life just seemed completely irrelevant and meaningless. He just thought, what's the point of all this? What's the point of all this richness? And etc. But there was something in his heart that knew there was something else. There was something else to life. There was another, whatever you want to call it, way of being, another way of seeing life, another dimension even. But he didn't know what it was, and he needed to realize that. I imagine he had an intuition that there was, as we all do, I think, sometimes we have intuitions that there's something else to life than what we're doing with our lives. there's something else to life. We don't quite know what it is, but we know there's something else. So he took this very seriously. Often you get this as a child. I used to get this as a child really, really strongly. This kind of this sense of wonder and the kind of there's something that with the world, there's kind of this wonderful something in the world that can be realized at any time or that can be seen at any time. There's everywhere, but it sort of hides away or I'm not able to see it. And then as we grow old, we sort of don't pay much attention to that. But he took that really seriously and decided to follow that track and to find out what it was. What was that thing? And he couldn't help but leave everything he had behind. He's like, he wanted to know. He realized that everything he had wasn't going to give him satisfaction. But to find out what it was that was going to give him real satisfaction and real meaning, he just had to leave everything he knew behind. He had to go into the unknown. So he left everything and went into the unknown, into the wilderness, in the forest. And I was telling you that he was a really courageous man, really kind of, strong, and he had a strong determination as well. So he went into the darkness in the middle of the night. He went into the forest, just real wild forest, not an English forest, but an Indian, really, really vast forest. You could easily get lost, and there were tigers, and there were all sorts of beasts around. And he didn't have a torch, so it was completely dark. And there's actually a text that's called Dread and Fear, where he talks about the kind of the fear that he experienced when he was in the middle of the night, in the middle of the forest. And he will think to himself, well, at some point there can be a tiger who might come and kill me, or I might encounter young people who are bandits and may kill me as well. All these dangers in the wilderness, so I may just get ill and die. But I imagine he was really skilled in living in the wilderness as well to be able to survive. But the way he managed his fear was he just carried on doing whatever he was doing. Whenever he experienced fear, if he was walking, he would just carry on walking with the same pace. If he was lying down, he would carry on lying down. I imagine if he saw something really dangerous, he'd actually move. But if he was just kind of irrational, nothing obvious was dangerous, he just carried on lying down or sitting down or walking. And this is really interesting because in that way he started training his mind. So it's interesting when we sit in meditation, sometimes we get itchy, and the first thing is straight away we go, or we get a little pain, and straight away we move, and that just creates habits, and so those are little examples of the way we can train our minds, and the way he trained his mind. He didn't follow the first kind of impulse. He was trying to find out where it was that created the whole mass of pain. He saw that there was great suffering in the world, so he wanted to find out what it was that caused that pain, and he thought it was somewhere in the mind. Later on, he realized it was the mind. The mind, everything, he said later on, everything is preceded, experiences are preceded by mind and led by mind and produced by mind. So he trained his mind. He took on the task of training his mind. And so often he would say that the mind is like a wild elephant that needs to be tamed. So when you feel itchy, you just kind of stay and see what happens. And a whole new experience opens up. So you can imagine with him being in the wilderness, a lot more, a real kind of extreme situation there, where he will feel this fear and he wouldn't just follow his first impulse and he would just carry on in the same way. Uh, I'm just thinking what to say next because I got a lot to say, but I haven't got a lot of time. So I need to be careful what to say next. As you may know, he went to find teachers and he mastered their teachings, and then he realized that wasn't enough, so he left them, and then he practiced austerity, so he stopped eating, and he nearly died of starvation, and he would hold his breath until it was really, really painful. And again, there's this text where he just describes the pain that he experienced. But then he realized that was a waste of time, basically. So he went from being really rich to being able to kind of just meet whatever desire and pleasure he wanted, to completely depriving himself from any nourishment. And he realized that those two were two extremes, and that they actually don't lead, none of them leads to understanding, to seeing things as they really are. They don't lead to real awakening, to seeing things as they really are, and to freedom, and to great joy and beauty. So he left that behind and adopted the middle way. And he had this memory when he was a child, just sitting under a tree, and spontaneously he just entered into this really beautiful state of mind where he just felt really connected with the land. He felt really connected to his body, and time just didn't seem to pass. Time just kind of didn't make sense, really. This really expansive state of mind, and he. It was just effortlessly he entered into this state of mind that offered him, showed him a way of experiencing life that was really different from anything else he'd experienced before and then later on in his life as well. That wasn't based on any external conditions. It wasn't based on his richness. It wasn't based on anything external. It just came from the mind. So he had this memory, and he thought, "Whoa, well, maybe this is the way." Because until then, he had been trying to push through, depriving himself of any pleasure to be able to enter into this greater freedom. And greater pleasure, but actually didn't work. So he thought there's a middle way. And I was thinking that the posture that he's often depicted in really communicates the kind of the middle way. When we sit in meditation, we need to adopt the middle way between being relaxed, being able to let our bodies be comfortable and relax, and at the same time really alert and aware of what's going on. And this is what the Buddha did. So he just sat under a tree. He adopted a comfortable posture. And he felt that that was the night. He thought, this is it. It's going to happen. Tonight's going to happen. What I've been looking for all these years. It's going to happen tonight. And just through the middle way, not putting too much effort, not relaxing too much, he went deeper and deeper into his mind, and he understood. He went right to the roots of existence, right to the kind of root of existence, and saw what it was that was causing him so much pain and causing the world so much pain. And he just freed himself from those. He saw that greed and hatred were the root causes to all suffering in the world. And through seeing that, he managed to release his heart from those boundaries, from those chains of greed and hatred and ignorance. So his mind and his heart were pure from those. He also saw that So he saw life after life, like in his mind, life after life sort of unfolded, and he saw the past, and he saw universes contracting and expanding, and he saw people being born and dying, and he understood that was the way things were. That is the way things are. And he saw one of the most significant things that he saw was that things and people arise independent of conditions. And this is a really kind of profound thing, that nothing is kind of separated. Nothing is God's self that is separated from anything else. Everything is kind of connected. Everything arises independent upon conditions. And he also saw that acts of loving kindness and generosity led to great happiness, and actions based on greed and hatred just ended up in more and more suffering. Just went around and round. This is what he called samsara, this kind of round movement of being driven by greed and hatred and delusion, the delusion that you are kind of separated from other people. Now there's something essential in you that kind of is unchanged. There's going to be more on what he thought in a few weeks' time, so I won't say a lot more about that. So anyway, he gained awakening. He awoke. He was like opening the curtains in a really dark room, and suddenly he was able to see. Often people meeting him, they would say that it was like lighting a candle in the middle of a dark room or in the middle of the jungle. Suddenly there was light. There was clarity. So I talked about his kind of fearlessness. After his awakening, he just overcame all fear. I talked about that. I talked about him being a warrior, and he gave up being a warrior in the literal sense, but he carried on considering himself being a warrior and conquering his mind as the greatest of all kind of wars. And he kind of often would talk in those terms to his disciples, kind of to conquer their minds. And he was also called Mahavira, great hero. Buddha wasn't his name. Buddha was just a title. So he had many titles, and one of them was Mahavira, great hero. Another one was the Tathagata, the one who goes beyond the cycle of vicious cycle of death and rebirth, in the sense of being guided or driven by desire and greed and hatred. But also means Tathagata also means come, the one who comes. So he had this great determination. And at the same time, he left the world behind when he awoke. He wasn't affected by the world anymore. But then he came back to teach. So it's like he came out of compassion, out of kind of kindness. He came back to the world and decided to teach. And he created this community of disciples, of people who could support each other. And that was one of his that's one of his greatest achievements, I think, apart from actually gaining awakening, the fact that he created a community that then passed on his teachings right until today, so we can sit in this room. It's just really remarkable. It's just really amazing. And there were no books then. It was just his word being passed on from disciple to disciple to disciple. So I'm just going to finish. I said I'll tell you stories, and I didn't. So I started with Yasa, who was a young rich man, who then after he met the Buddha, gained awakening. And then later on in the Buddha's career, he met lots of people. He met really poor people, old, young, everyone, kings and everyone. And And he taught them all, and lots of people gained awakening with his teaching. But at some point he met a man called Pingya. Pingya was a really old man. And he said that he couldn't move. He could just move from one rock to the next. And he kind of, I feel like Pingya sort of gave up on his life. There are these verses where he says, "Before I met the Buddha, people had always told me, this is how it has always been, and this is how it always be." And you can take that to be, I'm old now, thus people get old, and this is it, I'm gonna die soon. What I've done with my life, that's it. It's no more to it. There's no more to life than this, and this is how it always been. But then he met the Buddha, and the Buddha sort of offered, something else. The Buddha offered something much greater than that other thing. And so he wrote these really beautiful verses, so I'm just going to finish with those. They call him Buddha, enlightened, awake, dissolving darkness with total vision, and knowing the world to its ends. He has gone beyond all states of being and becoming. He has no inner poison drives. He is the total elimination of suffering. That man is the man I follow. It is like a bird that leaves the bushes and flies to the fruit trees of the forest. I too have left the bleary half-light of opinions. Like a swan, I have reached the great lake. Up till now, before I heard Gautama's teaching, people had always told me, this is how it has always been, and this is how it always be. Only the constant refrain of tradition, a breeding ground for speculation. But this prince, this beam of light, Gautama, was the only one who dissolved the darkness. This man, Gautama, is a universe of wisdom and a world of understanding. Thank you.